You're listening to Badass Coaching, a podcast of the Ad Astra Coach Alliance. I'm your host, Andy Huckaba. In this episode, we explore the power and importance of feedback in all aspects of our lives. Whether you're a student seeking guidance from your teacher, an employee looking for recognition from your boss, or a friend seeking advice from your peers, feedback is essential for personal and professional growth. In this podcast, our coaches will dive into the benefits and challenges of feedback, share real-life examples of how it can impact our lives, and discuss practical tips for giving and receiving feedback effectively. So join us now as we embark on the journey to discover the true value of feedback and how it can help us become the best versions of ourselves. A warm welcome today to Seth Bate and Joyce McEwen Crane, both PCC credentialed coaches and partners of the Ad Astra Coach Alliance. Welcome.
Hi, Andy.
And Seth. Thank you, Andy. Would you like some feedback on that introduction?
Absolutely. Well, let me start off. What do we mean by feedback?
Yeah, to me, feedback is any data we get about how we're being perceived or our performance. I think the connotation that we're aiming for in today's conversation is specific and intentional data that's provided or received. But let's acknowledge that we're all getting lots of feedback all the time if we're open to it. What would you add, Joyce?
Yeah, I think the idea here that we're more focused on is less about data that's coming in all the time. We just don't see it as feedback, and more about something a bit more formal or that we request. And there can be solicited feedback and unsolicited feedback. So you have to look at that as well.
That's true.
The data that we get from other people or from, you know, in some means, it gives us information about ourselves.
So tell me, why do people need or want feedback?
Well, I can offer an example of when I have asked for feedback multiple times is when I'm learning something new or learning to do something new. For example, when I'm learning to teach a new topic, I would really like information from people about how clear I was, about how clear the message was communicated, and how much I landed the topic I was supposed to discuss, how much I interacted with people, was it effective, et cetera. So that's one example of where I really like getting feedback because I have a desire to get better.
That's interesting. There's a stat out there, and I believe this came from David Rock. The research found roughly 87% of employees want to be developed in their job, but only a third report actually receiving the feedback they need to engage and improve. And so that aligns somewhat with what you're talking about, that you want to have that feedback so that you can improve and get better.
Yeah, I'm a little biased because I'm one of those, like, on strengths assessments, learning and development is big for me. It's a big value for me. And so I think there's intellectual learning, but that doesn't tell me a lot about how I'm being perceived or my impact and how well I'm doing. And that's part of that learning piece for me, part of that learning value for me. What about you, Seth?
I have a couple of thoughts, and these might be in the category of things that Andy cuts later. One thought I have is that I need, and I think people need feedback because we are telling ourselves one story all the time. And as we know from other conversations, that story is one in which we're usually the people who are pretty competent. And so the story is rarely one that leads to self-improvement. And so for me, feedback is necessary, if not always pleasurable, just to hear some different stories. The other part of that I think is an additional layer is, as someone who in a workplace environment has a lot of privilege, I have to pay special attention to how I'm perceived, because there are a lot of cultural messages that are saying whatever I do is fine. And So I have to really look for what might be feedback that would suggest I still have areas to develop in.
I appreciate that, Seth. I think another reason we need the feedback is because we have a lot of blind spots or bias. And it's hard for me to see the blind spot or know the bias I carry or hold unless somebody brings that to me.
So I'm curious, what does feedback look like? What form does it come in? Or what forms?
So I get and provide feedback in a range of forms. When I'm getting or providing feedback on something really specific, like the skill of coaching, we're all professional coaches here. My mentor coach gives me very specific feedback against a rubric that is codified by an international organization, and it comes in conversation and in written form. And I especially like that because, you know, whatever feelings I might have in the moment about feedback that says that I'm not perfect, I can still come back to the written feedback and learn from that when I'm maybe a little more emotionally ready. But I think in my work environment, the feedback that I get most often is 10 minutes after we're done with a meeting or a project or a presentation, just checking in with somebody who's been in the room, often the person I'm working with, but not always, and saying, hey, what was that like for you? And how did I show up?
Seth, you're making me think of, you know, my earlier career was as a psychologist, and in training to do therapy with people, depending on the school you go to, obviously, there's lots of ways to get feedback about your work. Sometimes you may tape a session like we do in coaching sometimes, and you get feedback later. I was so unnerved originally when I was learning to be a therapist, and I had the same experience a bit as a coach when I was getting live feedback. So in the therapy world, there's something called a bug in your ear as one dynamic that can be used for feedback. And you literally are hearing somebody talk to you and give you feedback in the moment. And when I'm to switch now to coaching, when I mentor coaching folks and they want to coach me and get feedback, that's so much fun in the moment to just let them know, this is how I'm experiencing you, or this is how I'm experiencing that question. Here's what that means to me. You know, being able to give them feedback in the moment, to me, I have found it's more helpful because I can do something, I can make a shift in the moment if I have that feedback then. Versus retrospectively, when I don't feel like I can do anything about what just happened, I can learn maybe from those moments and take it forward. But I really like the immediate feedback.
So that's it's fascinating. I'm thinking about what it's like to receive feedback versus what it's like to give feedback. And those are two different modalities, right? Mm-hmm. Receiving feedback. Sometimes you feel like you're being judged. And I don't think people like to be judged by and large, right?
Yeah.
Is that part of the fear or part of the pushback perhaps that you felt in those early days when you were getting feedback?
Yeah, Andy, I think some of that depends on your mindset. So again, this is me talking as a bias towards getting things right and getting things done well. I remember as a young therapist, just feeling it was way beyond humble in those initial sessions to get feedback because I wanted to do things well. And when I really wasn't being my best, doing the best work for my clients in the moment, number one, I was thankful that somebody else was watching me and could say, hey, do this now. But you know, it's just really humbling. But I also had a mindset in that space that I'm here to learn. I'm still very much a novice at this. And so I think in coaching, even when I'm getting feedback from my mentor coach, I have to be in that right mindset. There's a reason I'm here with this person who has, you know, more experience than I do, probably has a lot more wisdom than I do. And that mindset is critical for me to be able to grow and develop. If I come thinking I know it all, then what's the purpose of that person being in the room with me? And I'm not going to hear anything they say anyway. If I'm giving feedback, I do have a mindset about the growth and development of the person I'm working with. Like, I want good for them. I do want them to grow. I assume they're coming to me and are in this relationship because of a desire to grow and get better at their skills. So the mindset for me there is about the growth and learning and me being honest about what I'm seeing and offering that to the person to make some interpretations or make meaning of it.
And the hope is that your mindsets are together on this, right?
I sure hope so.
Both as the receiver and the giver, because if they aren't, then that causes some issues or some challenges. Seth, what's going on in your mind right now when you think about being a receiver versus a giver of feedback?
I don't know that this is a big step beyond what Joyce has already brought into the conversation, because I do think mindset is necessary as both giver and receiver. It's an area where I have developed and continue to develop. And on my good days, like I really rely on the things that I learned as a performing artist, where there are a million choices. And sometimes it takes a director or a conductor to say, you know, you made this choice. Here's how it landed. Try something else next time. But I still have days when I'm feeling defensive, or when I feel like if someone's feedback is that I was not perfect, they got to really prove it to me, man. So it's easy, I think, for me to have empathy when I'm giving feedback to people who have those defensive reactions, because that's definitely part of my makeup. And I just hope I have more good days than bad.
So what do you think is happening, Seth, on at those times when you feel the defensiveness?
I have a feeling that there's a brain science answer that you can bring in that I don't have. But it is almost a fighting response or a really dug in defensive response.
When you don't see that point of view that's coming across to you,
right?
Then your choices are to shut up and accept it, or to question it, or to fight it, right?
Fight, flight, flee, or faint.
Yeah, right.
Right. And I think all of us know that surprising people with feedback is not probably the best practice. But there's got to be some kind of sweet spot between having some idea that it's coming, but also not having to wait on it long enough to start building up those defensive stories. So that, you know, that's a little case in point. I got a note today from my supervisor that my performance review is complete. And I have every reason to think it's overall the kind of feedback that I want, right? So starting from a place of belief in me and showing me other options, but I'm not allowed to see it until March 1st, which is 9 days away.
Oh my.
Well, I'm going to spend 9 days wondering, you know, what's been written down about me.
So that brings to mind an interesting question. And that's the question of silence as feedback. And what happens in the receiver's brain and body when there's silence?
You know, that actually just happened to me recently. I was not on the receiving end of the silence. I was the one providing the silence. And it really, the silence was there because I was thinking. I was trying to figure out what are the words to use to answer the question the person just asked of me about them. And I wanted to be honest. And I also wanted to give that information in a way I thought they could hear it best. What I believe probably happened is that silence led to angst for them, or that silence was interpreted as, oh, this can't be good. And so I remember experiencing a bit of pushback from them or explanation from them after that. And that was feedback for me to know, okay, that wasn't received the way that you thought it was. So it took a little bit of repair in the moment.
So Seth, you are going through this period of silence right now, right? You described it. And so what's the story you're telling to yourself during this silent period that may or may not be true?
I'm finding myself thinking through the various aspects that my employer measures against and almost pre-stating my story about where I think I have shown up in that area in this year. And for no logical reason, right? I don't have to defend against this, but knowing it's out there and not hearing it, I think is causing some of that. I also think that I have used silence well in providing feedback by just creating some space for somebody to reflect. But I think I've misused silence. And I think about this as a parent. I think sometimes trying to dial back the critical parent mindset, I have chosen silent parent. And I'm not sure ultimately that is any more helpful. So one of the things that I'm taking away from this conversation already is, when do I use silence, and am I doing it intentionally and with the effect that I want?
Andy, you're making me think about this difference in folks who extrovert their thoughts and folks who introvert their thoughts. Since I needed silence to collect my thoughts, I'm just curious about if there's impact on people that immediately give it versus people that don't immediately give the feedback.
You know, I think of the situation of an employee who says, gee, my boss never talks to me, so that must mean my boss doesn't like me. Mm-hmm. Or that must be mean because my boss thinks I'm doing a great job and doesn't need to talk to me, right? And so that employee is making up their own narrative in that space, in that silence. Mm-hmm. Because of the lack of direct feedback from the boss. And it's possible that neither one of those stories is actually true, right?
Well, you bring up an interesting point about people's coping mechanisms, perhaps. You know, if part of my default when I'm not hearing feedback is that I'm very sure of myself, then the story will probably be something about how good I'm doing, and therefore they don't need to give me feedback. And if the, you know, what I tell myself is that I'm not very good, et cetera, then the story I'm likely to hold is that there's something, they think there's something wrong, or I'm not doing something well. When's the ball going to drop? You're going to tell me the truth.
So what kind of guidance can we give leaders, managers, parents, teachers, anybody who has an opportunity to give feedback to another person? What kind of guidance can we give them that might help this process?
Two things come to mind for me. One, Joyce has already elevated, is choosing your mindset. So if you were in a position to provide feedback, to do so really with the intent to serve and with a belief that the person who's in front of you is capable, and you're not providing feedback to fix them. Mm-hmm. You're providing feedback so that they have one more piece of data that they can use when it's useful. The other thing is, I think, to counter the silence challenge, just for it to be regular. And, you know, every introductory management conversation is, you know, you need to provide timely feedback in the moment. And, you know, I wish every workplace made that possible. But to regularly hear from someone, hey, here's what I noticed today, starts to build a culture where that's expected and appreciated. And it doesn't create nearly as much defensiveness when sometimes that feedback is, hey, you missed the mark on this, or there's a different way.
I appreciate you bringing culture up, Seth. I would add to, you know, culture doesn't exist without relationship. And if you're going to give feedback to someone, make sure you're clear about what your relationship is with them. I think can be helpful. And I love it when I'm in a culture where feedback is sort of expected. It's part of how, it's part of the ethos, because it's part of how we see each other. We're all here to learn and grow together. And I care enough about the people around me to help with their development, and they care enough about me to help with mine. So I, you know, that kind of culture to me is quite freeing and supportive, versus a culture where I don't get feedback much, or people don't get feedback much. And I think they then feel more at risk with feedback because they're not really sure what's coming their way.
So I would hope that listeners to this podcast and others that are in a position of wanting feedback on their performance are more proactive in asking for it. I think in a lot of cases, they're just expecting a person to give them feedback unsolicited. And that might be an unrealistic expectation. What does it look like to ask for feedback specifically, that on a specific thing that I'm working on or doing or trying to improve on? And what would the value then be of the feedback that you got if you were able to ask for that?
Yeah, Andy, I think your word specific is really important there. As someone who does provide feedback in training to others, for somebody to ask me a larger question like, did I pass, versus specifically, what did I do well, where could I improve? The specifics are much easier for me to answer. The just how did I do kinds of questions, it's just not a helpful framing for me as someone trying to provide feedback for you, if that's what you're asking for.
Yeah, I remembered the work of Jenny Rogers, and in the some of the things that I have the privilege to do at Kansas Leadership Center, we come back to her work. And Jenny Rogers talks about useful feedback is tough on the performance, not the person. Mm-hmm. And so I think asking for feedback about my performance is the way to invite that. And I think as the receiver of feedback, if you start to hear feedback that is about you, not about the performance, you can at the very least dismiss that. And I hope are in a place where you can name that boundary. Hey, I wasn't looking for a for feedback on my general demeanor. I was looking for feedback on how this thing went.
So I'm curious about contrast that compares feedback and criticism. And I might volley this to you, Seth, although I think both you and I have taught this particular subject a number of times, feedback versus criticism. Talk me through the differences between these two things.
Yeah, the biggest difference, and this is, again, borrowing from Jenny Rogers' thoughts as well as our own experience, but feedback is really designed to help somebody learn more and improve performance. Criticism is a way of naming disappointment. So feedback is possibility-focused and future-focused. Criticism is kind of stuck in the moment. It's interesting. In addition to being a very amateur but enthusiastic performing artist, have been a professional arts critic. And arts criticism is really done well. It's arts feedback. It's here's how I experienced a piece of art or culture, and here's what I dream it could be, and here are some choices that I saw made. Arts criticism that is not done well is here's what's wrong with that thing somebody did.
Period. Right.
Do you do with that except defend it, right?
Yeah. It seems like a motivation thing, right? Where when you're talking about feedback, the motivation is on the improvement of the person you're giving feedback to. And criticism, the motivation is because I don't like it.
Because I don't like
it's,
it.
It's on me.
Because I think I'm right. And as somebody who has to be careful not to get too caught up in the story that I'm the smartest guy in the room, right? I could easily be stuck in the I'm right and they're wrong and this is why kind of criticism, which doesn't serve anyone except maybe my ego.
Yeah, ego is a big part of this, isn't it? It's how you hear things is going to come through that lens of how strong your ego is, or how I don't know if weak is the right word, but if you want feedback, I think you have to have a strong enough ego to withstand whatever you hear, and not so strong that you're set in the story that I'm right regardless.
A badass seeks feedback.
Yeah.
Thanks for that plug, by the way. And I believe you're right. So if we stand back from the circle that we've gone in this conversation, what are our key takeaways?
Well, one takeaway I have is that I have to check my ego, and I also have to be really open to feedback, hopefully from a variety of people, if I really want to grow and develop. I don't know how to do that without feedback.
Yeah, and similarly, one of the things that I'm taking away is I can't fill in my own blind spots. And whether I get feedback from one voice or many, it's at least an attempt to glimpse the things that I can't see myself.
I take away that my growth or anyone's growth and improvement is absolutely reliant on feedback. And I have to be open to accepting that feedback and, in fact, asking for that feedback specifically. Any other words of wisdom to our listeners today?
You know, one thing that's making me think about, Andy, your specific comment is that if I have one of those brains that starts to get very defensive or wants to go to defending myself when I'm hearing feedback, maybe a strategy is finding one thing of value about the feedback that I'm hearing. You know, so I'm sure that my brain's probably screaming more loudly about what I don't want to hear and the negative bent to the feedback I'm hearing. But, you know, what can I find of value? Like one thing that I could take away from that feedback that could actually help me stay focused on growth and improvement. And maybe for now, I can just leave the rest behind. I'll probably hear it again anyway, depending on what I'm doing and the more I ask for feedback. But yeah, I like this idea. If I got to hold something.
Yeah, you're really asking somebody to stand back and manage their trigger or triggers that might be activated by the feedback.
Yeah.
And then take a more thoughtful look at what they're hearing and what they're seeing. That's not a foreign concept to us, is it?
No, and I don't think you can hold on to all the feedback you get at one time anyway, generally. So I think you do have to kind of develop the skill of what is it that I can really use here and hold that, make that be of value enough that you want to learn something more, you want to do something different because of that and take that forward. But, you know, Seth, like you, if there's ever been a performance or if I'm training and getting specific feedback and somebody gives me a page of feedback, I'm probably going to take one or two of those ideas. And maybe I'll come back to the page at another time and maybe not. But I think my brain works best if I can just kind of stay focused on one or two things that I can find useful and move forward with them.
So one of the learnings might be that if you're giving feedback to somebody else, don't give too much at one time.
Yeah, my guess is it's probably kind of wasted.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Good thought. Closing thought, Seth.
Closing thought for me comes back to purpose. So if you are in a position to provide feedback, ask first some version of, what was your purpose in this thing? What were you trying to do? And the feedback then can be aligned to the purpose. And whether I'm providing formal feedback you know, as in this mentor coaching example we've been talking about, or informal in the moment, if I know that, then I know what I'm about to offer is more likely to be welcome and helpful.
Joyce, closing thoughts.
Yeah, I appreciate the conversation and what it's making me think about, both in my role as a mentor coach, Seth. So, you know, we're in a space right now where we're doing a lot of that kind of giving feedback work, and in the role of getting feedback from my peers. I'll be in a training next week, for example, where getting feedback is part of the game. So I'm just thinking about my openness to that feedback and what I really want to learn. And maybe I can get better feedback because I target what I ask.
Well, thank you, Joyce and Seth, for your wonderful thoughts here and insights and direction. And we look forward to talking to you on another topic soon.
That's the show. Thank you for joining the Ad Astra Coach Alliance podcast, Badass Coaching. If you want to find out more about the Ad Astra Coach Alliance, go to www.adastracoachalliance.com.